You're listening to From the Public Domain, short stories, excerpts, and essays from the public domain. I'm your host, Susie Alphins. The Good Anna by Gertrude Stein, Part 4, adapted for radio. Anna was now most uncertain what to do. She could go to Curtin, to her Miss Mary Wadsmith, who always wrote how much she needed Anna. But Anna still dreaded Miss Jane's interfering ways. Then, too, she could not yet go away from Bridgepoint and from Mrs. Lentman, unpleasant as it always was now over there. Through one of the doctor's friends, Anna heard of Miss Matilda. Anna was very doubtful about working for a Miss Matilda. She did not think it would be good working for a woman anymore. She had found it very good with Miss Mary, but she did not think many women would be so. Most women were interfering in their ways. Anna heard that Miss Matilda was a great big woman, not so big perhaps as her Miss Mary. Still, she was big, and the good Anna liked them better so. She did not like them thin and small and active, and always looking in and always prying. Anna could not make up her mind what was the best thing now for her to do. She could sew, and this way make a living, but she did not like such business very well. Mrs. Lentman urged the place with Miss Matilda. She was sure Anna would find it better so. The good Anna did not know. "Well, Anna," Mrs. Lentman said, "I tell you what we do. I go with you to that woman that tells fortunes. Perhaps she tell us something that will show us what is the best way for you now to do." It was very bad to go to a woman who tells fortunes. Anna was of strong South German Catholic religion, and the German priests in the churches always said that it was very bad to do things so. But what else now could the good Anna do? She was so mixed and bothered in her mind, and troubled with this life that was all wrong, though she did try so hard to do the best she knew. "All right, Mrs. Lentman," Anna said at last, "I think I go there now with you." This woman who told fortunes was a medium. She had a house in the lower quarter of the town. Mrs. Lentman and the good Anna went to her. The medium opened the door for them herself. She was a loose maid, dusty, dowdy woman, with a persuading, conscious, and embracing manner, and very greasy hair. The woman let them come into the house. The street door opened straight into the parlor, as is the way in the small houses of the South. The parlor had a thick and flowered carpet on the floor. The room was full of dirty things all made by hand. Some hung upon the wall. Some were on the seats and over backs of chairs, and some on tables and on those whatnots that poor people love. And everywhere were little things that break. Many of these little things were broken, and the place was stuffy and not clean. No medium uses her parlor for her work. It is always in her eating room that she has her trances. The eating room in all these houses is the living room in winter. It has a round table in the center covered with a decorated woolen cloth that has soaked in the grease of many dinners. For though it should be always taken off, it is easier to spread the cloth upon it than change it, for the blanket deadener than one owns. The upholstered chairs are dark and worn and dirty. The carpet has grown dingy with the food that's fallen from the table, the dirt that's scraped from off the shoes, and the dust that settles with the ages. The somber greenish-colored paper on the walls has been smoked a dismal, dirty gray, and all pervading is the smell of soup made out of onions and fat chunks of meat. The medium brought Mrs. Lentman and our Anna into this eating room after she had found out what it was they wanted. They all three sat around the table, and then the medium went into her trance. The medium first closed her eyes, and then they opened very wide and lifeless. She took a number of deep breaths, choked several times, and swallowed very hard. She waved her hand back every now and then, and she began to speak in a monotonous, slow, even tone. "I see. I see. Don't crowd so on me. I see. I see. Too many forms. Don't crowd so on me. I see. I see. You are thinking of something. You don't know whether you want to do it now. I see. I see. Don't crowd so on me. I see. I see. You are not sure. I see. I see a house with trees around it. It is dark. It is evening. I see. I see. You go in the house. I see. I see you come out. It will be all right. You go and do it. Do what you are not certain about. It will come out all right. It is best, and you should do it now. She stopped. She made deep gulps. Her eyes rolled back into her head. She swallowed hard, and then she was her former dingy and bland self again. "Did you get what you wanted, that the spirit should tell you?" the woman asked. Mrs. Lentman answered yes. It was just what her friend had wanted so bad to know. Anna was uneasy in this house with superstition, with fear of her good priest, and with a disgust at all the dirt and grease. But she was most content now, for she knew what it was best for her to do. Anna paid the woman for her work, and then they came away. "There, Anna, didn't I tell you how it would all be? You see, the spirit says so, too. You must take the place with Miss Matilda. That is what I told you was the best thing for you to do. We go out and see her where she lives tonight. Ain't you glad, Anna, that I took you to this place, so you know now what you will do?" Mrs. Lentman and Anna went that evening to see Miss Matilda. Miss Matilda was staying with a friend who lived in a house that did have trees about. Miss Matilda was not there herself to talk with Anna. If it had not been that it was evening and so dark, and that this house had trees all round about, and that Anna found herself going in and coming out, just as the woman that day said that she would do, had it not all been just as the medium said, the good Anna would never have taken the place with Miss Matilda. Anna did not see Miss Matilda, and she did not like the friend who acted in her place. This friend was a dark, sweet, gentle little mother woman, very easy to be pleased in her own work, and very good to servants. But she felt that acting for her young friend, the careless Miss Matilda, she must be very careful to examine well, and see that all was right, and that Anna would surely do the best she knew. She asked Anna all about her ways and her intentions, and how much she would spend, and how often she went out, and whether she could wash and cook and sew. The good Anna set her teeth fast to endure, and would hardly answer anything at all. Mrs. Lentman made it all go fairly well. The good Anna was all worked up with her resentment, and Miss Matilda's friend did not think that she would do. However, Miss Matilda was willing to begin, and as for Anna, she knew that the medium said it must be so. Mrs. Lentman, too, was sure, and said she knew that this was the best thing for Anna now to do. So Anna sent word at last to Miss Matilda that if she wanted her, she would try if it would do. So Anna began a new life taking care of Miss Matilda. Anna fixed up the little red brick house where Miss Matilda was going to live and made it very pleasant, clean, and nice. She brought over her dog, Baby, and her parrot. She hired Lizzie for a second girl to be with her, and soon they were all content. All except the parrot, for Miss Matilda did not like its scream. Baby was all right, but not the parrot. But then Anna never really loved the parrot, and so she gave it to the Dretton girls to keep. Before Anna could really rest content with Miss Matilda, she had to tell her good German priest what it was that she had done, and how very bad it was that she had been, and how she would never do so again. Anna really did believe with all her might. It was her fortune never to live with people who had any faith, but then that never worried Anna. She prayed for them always as she should, and she was very sure that they were good. The doctor loved to tease her with his doubts, and Miss Matilda liked to do so too, but with the tolerant spirit of her church, Anna never thought that such things were bad for them to do. Anna found it hard to always know just why it was that things went wrong. Sometimes her glasses broke, and then she knew that she had not done her duty by the church, just in the way that she should do. Sometimes she was so hard at work that she would not go to Mass. Something always happened then. Anna's temper grew irritable, and her ways uncertain and distraught. Everybody suffered, and then her glasses broke. That was always very bad, because they cost so much to fix. Still, in a way, it always ended Anna's troubles, because she knew then that all this was because she had been bad. As long as she could scold, it might be just the bad ways of all the thoughtless, careless world. But when her glasses broke, that made it clear. That meant it was she herself who had been bad. No, it was no use for Anna not to do the way she should, for things always then went wrong and finally cost money to make whole. And this was the hardest thing for the good Anna to endure. Anna almost always did her duty. She made confession and her mission whenever it was right. Of course, she did not tell the father when she deceived people for their good, or when she wanted them to give something for a little less. When Anna told such histories to her doctor and later to her cherished Miss Matilda, her eyes were always full of humor and enjoyment as she explained that she had said it so, and now she would not have to tell the father, for she had not really made a sin. But going to a fortune teller, Anna knew, was really bad. That had to be told to the father just as it was, and penance had then to be done. Anna did this, and now her new life was well begun, making Miss Matilda and the rest do just the way they should. Yes, taking care of Miss Matilda were the happiest days of all the good Anna's strong, hard-working life. With Miss Matilda, Anna did it all, the clothes, the house, the hats, what she should wear, and when, and what was always best for her to do. There was nothing Miss Matilda would not let Anna manage, and only be too glad if she would do. Anna scolded and cooked and sewed and saved so well that Miss Matilda had so much to spend that it kept Anna still busier scolding all the time about the things she bought, that made so much work for Anna and the other girl to do. But for all the scolding, Anna was proud almost to bursting of her cherished Miss Matilda, with all her knowledge and her great possessions, and the good Anna was always telling of it all to everybody that she knew. Yes, these were the happiest days of all her life with Anna, even though with her friends there were great sorrows. But these sorrows did not hurt the good Anna now, as they had done in the years that went before. Miss Matilda was not a romance in the good Anna's life, but Anna gave her so much strong affection that it almost filled her life as full. It was well for the good Anna that her life with Miss Matilda was so happy, for now in these days, Mrs. Lentman went altogether bad. The doctor she had learned to know was too certainly an evil as well as a mysterious man, and he had power over the widow and midwife, Mrs. Lentman. Anna never saw Mrs. Lentman at all now anymore. Mrs. Lentman had borrowed some more money and had given Anna a note then for it all, and after that Anna never saw her anymore. Anna now stopped altogether going to the Lentmans. Julia, the tall, gawky, good, blonde, stupid daughter, came often to see Anna, but she could tell little of her mother. It certainly did look very much as if Mrs. Lentman had now gone altogether bad. This was a great grief to the good Anna, but not so great a grief as it would have been had not Miss Matilda meant so much to her now. Mrs. Lentman went from bad to worse. The doctor, the mysterious and evil man, got into trouble doing things that were not right to do. Mrs. Lentman was mixed up in this affair. It was just as bad as it could be, but they managed, both the doctor and Mrs. Lentman, finally to come out safe. Everybody was so sorry about Mrs. Lentman. She had been really a good woman before she met this doctor, and even now, she certainly had not been really bad. For several years now, Anna never even saw her friend. But Anna always found new people to befriend, people who, in the kindly fashion of the poor, used up her savings and then gave promises in place of payments. Anna never really thought that these people would be good, but when they did not do the way they should, and when they did not pay her back the money she had loaned, and never seemed the better for her care, then Anna would grow bitter with the world. No, none of them had any sense of what was the right way for them to do, so Anna would repeat in her despair. The poor are generous with their things. They give always what they have, but with them to give or to receive brings with it no feeling that they owe the giver for the gift. Even a thrifty German Anna was ready to give all that she had saved, and so not be sure that she would have enough to take care of herself if she fell sick, or for old age, when she could not work. Save, and you will have the money you have saved, was true only for the day of saving, even for a thrifty German Anna. There was no certain way to have it for old age, for it must always be in strangers' hands in a bank or in investments by a friend. And so in any day one might need life and help from others of the working poor, there was no way a woman who had a little saved could say them so. So the good Anna gave her all to friends and strangers, to children, dogs and cats, to anything that asked or seemed to need her care. It was in this way that Anna came to help the barber and his wife who lived around the corner, and who, somehow, could never make ends meet. They worked hard, were thrifty, had no vices, but the barber was one of them who never can make money. Whoever owed him money did not pay. Whenever he had a chance at a good job, he fell sick and could not take it. It was never his own fault that he had trouble, but he never seemed to make things come out right. His wife was a blonde, thin, pale German little woman who bore her children very hard and worked too soon, and then till she was sick. She, too, always had things that went wrong. They both needed constant help and patience, and the good Anna gave both to them all the time. Another woman who needed help from the good Anna was one who was in trouble from being good to others. This woman's husband's brother, who was very good, worked in a shop where there was a bohemian who was getting sick with a consumption. This man got so much worse he could not do his work, but he was not so sick that he could stay in a hospital. So this woman had him living there with her. He was not a nice man, nor was he thankful for all the woman did for him. He was cross to her two children and made a great mess always in her house. The doctor said he must have many things to eat, and the woman and the brother of the husband got them for him. There was no friendship, no affection, no liking even for the man this woman cared for, no claim of common country or of kin. But in the kindly fashion of the poor, this woman gave her all and made her house a nasty place, and for a man who was not even grateful for a gift. Then, of course, the woman herself got into trouble. Her husband's brother was now married. Her husband lost his job. She did not have the money for the rent. It was the good Anna's savings that were handy. So it went on. Sometimes a little girl, sometimes a big one was in trouble, and Anna heard of them and helped them to find places. Stray dogs and cats Anna always kept until she found them homes. She was always careful to learn whether these people would be good to animals. Out of the whole collection of stray creatures, it was the young Peter and the jolly little Rags Anna could not find it in her heart to part with. These became part of the household of the good Anna's Miss Matilda. Peter was a very useless creature, a foolish, silly, cherished, coward male. It was wild to see him rush up and down in the backyard, barking and bouncing at the wall, when there was some dog out beyond. But when the very littlest one there was got inside of the fence and only looked at Peter, Peter would retire to his Anna and blot himself out between her skirts. When Peter was left downstairs alone, he howled. "I'm all alone," he wailed, and then the good Anna would have to come and fetch him up. Once when Anna stayed a few nights in a house not far away, she had to carry Peter all the way, for Peter was afraid when he found himself on the street outside his house. Peter was a good-sized creature, and he sat there and he howled, and the good Anna carried him all the way in her own arms. He was a coward, was this Peter, but he had kindly, gentle eyes and a pretty collie head, and his fur was very thick and white and nice when he was washed. And then Peter never strayed away, and he looked out of his nice eyes, and he liked it when you rubbed him down, and he forgot you when you went away, and he barked whenever there was any noise. When he was a little pup, he had one night been put into the yard, and that was all of his origin she knew. The good Anna loved him well and spoiled him as a good German mother always does her son. Little Rags was very different in his nature. He was a lively creature made out of ends of things, all fluffy and dust color, and he was always bounding up into the air and darting all about over and then under silly Peter, and often straight into solemn, fat, blind, sleepy baby, and then in a wild rush after some stray cat. Rags was a pleasant, jolly little fellow. The good Anna liked him very well, but never with her strength as she loved her good-looking, coward, foolish young man, Peter. Baby was the dog of her past life, and she held Anna with old ties of past affection. Peter was the spoiled, good-looking young man of her middle age, and Rags was always something of a toy. She liked him, but he never struck in very deep. Rags had strayed in somehow one day, and then, when no home for him was quickly found, he had just stayed right there. It was a very happy family there altogether in the kitchen, the good Anna and Sally and old baby and young Peter, and the jolly little Rags. The parrot had passed out of Anna's life. She had never really loved the parrot, and now she hardly thought to ask for him, even when she visited the Drettons. Mrs. Dretton was a friend Anna always went to for her Sundays. She did not get advice from Mrs. Dretton as she used to from the widow, Mrs. Lentman, for Mrs. Dretton was a mild, worn, unaggressive nature that never cared to influence or to lead. But they could mourn together for the world, these two worn, working German women, for its sadness and its wicked ways of doing. Mrs. Dretton knew so well what one could suffer. "No, Miss Matilda," she would say. "The young people nowadays have no sense for saving and putting money by, so they will have something to use when they need it. There's Julia and her Charlie. I went in there the other day, Miss Matilda, and they had a new table with a marble top on it, and they had a grand new plush album. 'Where did you get that album?' I asked Julia. 'Oh, Charlie, he gave it to me for my birthday,' she said. And I asked her if it was paid for, and she said not all yet, but it would be soon. Now, I ask you, what business have they, Miss Matilda, when they ain't paid for anything they got already? What business have they to be buying new things for her birthdays? Julia, she don't do no work. She just sits around and thinks how she can spend the money. And Charlie, he never puts 1 cent by. I never see anything like the people nowadays, Miss Matilda. They don't seem to have any sense of being careful about money. Julia and Charlie, when they have any children, they won't have nothing to bring them up with right. I said that to Julia, Miss Matilda, when she showed me those silly things that Charlie bought her. And she just said in her silly, giggling way, 'Perhaps they don't have any children.' And then, Miss Matilda, you know there is Mrs. Lentman. You know she regular adopted little Johnny, just so she could pay out some more money, just as if she didn't have trouble enough taking care of her own children. No, Miss Matilda, I never see how people can do things so. People don't seem to have no sense of right or wrong, or anything these days, Miss Matilda. They are just careless, and thinking always of themselves and how they can always have a happy time. No, Miss Matilda, I don't see how people can go on and do things so." The good Anna could not understand the careless and bad ways of all the world, and always she grew bitter with it all. No, not one of them had any sense of what was the right way for them to do. Anna's past life was now drawing to an end. Her old blind dog, Baby, was sick and like to die. Baby had been the first gift from her friend, the widow, Mrs. Lentman, in the old days when Anna had been with Miss Mary Wadsmith, and when these two women had first come together. Through all the years of change, Baby had stayed with the good Anna, growing old and fat and blind and lazy. Baby had been active and a ratter when she was young, but that was so long ago it was forgotten, and for many years now Baby had wanted only her warm basket and her dinner. Anna, in her active life, found need of others, of Peter and the funny little Rags, but always Baby was the eldest and held her with the ties of old affection. Anna was harsh when the young ones tried to keep poor Baby out and use her basket. Baby had been blind now for some years, as dogs get, when they are no longer active. She got weak and fat and breathless, and she could not even stand long anymore. Anna had always to see that she got her dinner and that the young active ones did not deprive her. Baby did not die with a real sickness. She just got older and more blind and coughed and then more quiet. And then slowly, one bright summer's day, she died. There is nothing more dreary than old age in animals. Somehow, it is all wrong that they should have gray hair and withered skin and blind old eyes and decayed and useless teeth. And so one day, old Baby died. It was dreary, more than sad, for the good Anna. She did not want the poor old beast to linger with its weary age and blind old eyes and dismal shaking cough. But this death left Anna very empty. She had the foolish young man Peter and the jolly little Rags for comfort. But Baby had been the only one that could remember. The good Anna wanted a real graveyard for her baby, but this could not be in a Christian country. And so Anna all alone took her old friend done up in decent wrappings and put her into the ground in some quiet place that Anna knew of. The good Anna did not weep for poor old baby. Nay, she had not time even to feel lonely, for with the good Anna, it was sorrow upon sorrow. She was now no longer to keep house for Miss Matilda. When Anna had first come to Miss Matilda, she had known that it might be only for a few years, for Miss Matilda was given to much wandering and often changed her home and found new places where she went to live. The good Anna did not think much about this, for when she first went to Miss Matilda, she had not thought that she would like it, and so she had not worried about staying. Then, in those happy years that they had been together, Anna had made herself forget it. This last year, when she knew that it was coming, she had tried hard to think it would not happen. "We won't talk about it now, Miss Matilda. Perhaps we all be dead by then," she would say when Miss Matilda tried to talk it over. Or, "If we live till then, Miss Matilda, perhaps you will be staying on right here." No, the good Anna could not talk as if this thing were real. It was too weary to be once more left with strangers. Both the good Anna and her cherished Miss Matilda tried hard to think that this would not really happen. Anna made missions and all kinds of things to keep her Miss Matilda, and Miss Matilda thought out all the ways to see if the good Anna could not go with her. But neither the missions nor the plans had much success. Miss Matilda would go, and she was going far away to a new country where Anna could not live, for she would be too lonesome. There was nothing that these two could do but part. "Perhaps we all be dead by then," the good Anna would repeat. But even that did not really happen. "If we all live till then," Miss Matilda came out truer. They all did live till then, all except poor old blind baby, and they simply had to part. Poor Anna and poor Miss Matilda, they could not look at each other that last day. Anna could not keep herself busy working. She just went in and out, and sometimes scolded. Anna could not make up her mind what she should do now for her future. She said that she would for a while keep this little red brick house that they had lived in. Perhaps she might just take in a few boarders. She did not know. She would write about it later and tell it all to Miss Matilda. The dreary day dragged out, and then all was ready for Miss Matilda left to take her train. Anna stood strained and pale and dried-eyed on the white stone steps of the little red brick house that they had lived in. The last thing Miss Matilda heard was the good Anna bidding foolish Peter say goodbye and be sure to remember Miss Matilda. You've been listening to From the Public Domain. Today's selections were read by Susie Alphons. This is your host, Susie Alphons.